All right, folks, welcome back to Humans of the Pro-Life Movement, a show put on by the Pro-Life Guys podcast where we feature the people who are part of the pro-life movement. And today is a cool day because we're turning the microphones around. I want to introduce a good friend of mine, Oscar. How you doing, sir?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you, Cam.
Yeah, so Oscar is one of our current return interns. He's going to be on staff in Vancouver going forward. He and I are working on a super cool project that we'll have more information on coming up, but he's going to be doing a million interviews. And we thought, what better way to kick off his future interviewing pro-life people than to turn the microphones around and interview somebody that you already know a lot of stuff about, which is me. And so Oscar is going to be conducting today's Humans of the Pro-Life Movement, and anyone who wants to know a little bit more about me can tune in. If you don't want to hear anything else about me, then you can shut off your podcast right now and tune back in for somebody that's more interesting than I am. Cool. With that said, Oscar, I'm going to throw it over to you, and let's get into it.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you so much, Cam. I know this is a really exciting opportunity, a really interesting episode, that's for sure. And you've asked this question more times than you can probably count, but I'd like to throw it to you. Tell me about how you got involved in the pro-life movement.
Yeah, so I wish that I had some crazy glory story about how I always knew from a young babe that I needed to protect preborn children. I got guilt-tripped into the pro-life movement. When I was at university, I was one of the most pretentious people there. I walked around with a copy of the Globe and Mail in my back pocket that I would read in between classes. And I was interested in joining the squash club and the badminton club and political things and all this kind of highfalutin whatever. And as I was walking through the club's days at University of Victoria, where I attended university, I got called out by a friend of my older brother, who was the current president of the Pro-Life Club at the University of Victoria. And she asked if I would sign up for the Pro-Life Club, not because she thought that I would contribute, really, not because she thought that I would be an asset to the Pro-Life Club in any meaningful way, apart from being a signature on a page, because she needed 10 or 12 people to get the club ratified. And so I sheepishly signed my name in very illegible writing. I put my student numbers so that they could get ratified, and I did not think about it again for almost a full year, at which point the Lord works in wonderful ways, and it randomly came up with a friend of a friend that I had been a part of the Pro-Life Club, and she called me out and said that I wasn't a part of the Pro-Life Club because she had never seen me before, because she was the vice president of the Pro-Life Club, and how dare I claim that I was part of the Pro-Life Club if I never did anything. And so I got guilt-tripped again into helping out with an event, a debate between Stephanie Gray, who was the executive director of CCBR at the time, and a philosophy professor at UVic. And I thought that I was going to hand out debate surveys, and that was all I was going to do. And then she rocked my world in that debate and showed the reality of what abortion does to a preborn child, radically changed the way that I understood the abortion issue from an abstract idea or theory or religious concept to a concrete, these humans are dying day after day after day, and they're humans like me. Funny story related to that. So that was in the fall of 2009, hence the gray hair. Fall of 2009, and she was, Stephanie was advertising for CCBR's first ever Florida mission trip. And I was so convicted by her debate that I approached her afterwards and I asked her, hey, can you send me the details for your Florida trip? I would love to be a part of it. And she talked to me for less than 30 seconds. And she said, Cam, with all due respect, you're not ready for it. Please don't apply. So I was rejected before I even applied to it, which was totally fair because I'd never done anything meaningful in the pro-life movement before. I put my nose to the grindstone and got involved with a bunch of stuff at UVic, and I was accepted to the second ever Florida mission trip in February 2011. And here I am, almost 15 years later, still working for CCBR. So that's kind of the origin story, as embarrassing as it may be.
Wow, thank you so much. I know your story sounds like many others that have got involved in the pro-life movement, in that, you know, they see the reality of abortion, they feel summoned and called to the movement. And wow, like 15 years later, here you are, Western Outreach of the CCBR. I'm a little bit curious, like, was it at that moment that you knew, you know, now I'm going to go into the pro-life movement as a full-time activist? Or like, what was that process like of realizing that, you know, maybe the university career that you had had in mind was not actually where you were being called to go?
So it definitely was kind of the first pebbles that started the avalanche, I would say, that I went from. So up until that point, and this again showcases just how shallow I was at the time, and often in many ways still am now. But so up until that debate, I was planning on going into optometry and being an eye doctor, not because I had a particular passion for optometry, but rather because I got the designation of doctor without any risk of ever killing anyone. Because if your optometrist kills you, they're doing something tragically wrong. And so I went from there to saying, okay, well, I have a very deep passion for biology. What can I do with my biology interest? And I went towards developmental biology from that point, but then realized just this ache in my heart that like, this still isn't enough. This still isn't enough. I can't just do a mission trip down to Florida. I can't just do more and more local volunteering. And so I applied to the internship, and I did that in 2012. And during the internship, I realized, you know, this, not only is there a pressing need, but God has given me some capacity to be able to do this with his grace. And that Greg Cunningham, who is the founder of CBR in the States, came up and did a crash course and basically called each of us out on, you are now more qualified to work in Canada's pro-life movement than 99% of people already in Canada's pro-life movement. We're not talking about 99% of Canadians, but 99% of people working in Canada's pro-life movement. You already have more outreach experience, more apologetics training, more all of this kind of stuff. And if you spurn that training, then preborn children lose out. Then preborn children lose out on an investment that has been made by the leaders in Canada and the global leaders that contributed towards it. And so it definitely started that avalanche towards not how much is necessary, but rather how much is possible. How much could I do reasonably in defense of these kids and their families?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, thank the Lord that you answered the call, and now you've got 15 years behind your belt of good work and of saving lives. And I'd like to ask you too, what does your life look like outside of the pro-life movement? Because I'm sure you haven't just been having your nose to the grindstone for 15 years and, you know, this is everything that's going on.
So I, in some ways, I've had my nose to the grindstone far too much. My wife would love if I didn't have it there quite as much as I do. I have a beautiful wife and two lovely children. Outside of CCBR, I do a ton of sports. I feel like a bit of a black sheep in CCBR that I do sports and I read fiction. And I feel like I'm one of the few people at CCBR that have a... And like when I say I do sports, like I have a borderline unhealthy appreciation for sports. Like I could name you most of the roster from the 1996 Vancouver Canucks and what they did and why Alex McGillney should be in the Hall of Fame. And I love sports. I love sports because of the athletic pursuit. I love sports because of the technical and strategic considerations that go into it. I love playing a ton of sports. I play a ton of baseball and I coach baseball because I love a world where I don't have to worry quite so much about the eggshells of human experience and whatnot, that if you make a bad play, I'm going to tell you that you made a bad play. And if I made a bad play, I'm going to expect you to tell me straight up. And there isn't quite as much caution that gets put into it and whatnot. I do a lot of that. And then I used to be big into hiking. I don't do a lot of hiking anymore with the small kids because as much as I can hike all afternoon in a hot, sunny day or bitter cold, having a kid in a kid carrier who isn't moving at all has a harder time with that. So love sports, love my family, and have tried to be more and more active in the church community as well. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fantastic. And I think, you know, in the talks that you've given the interns in the office and even in your training presentations, I think sports gets brought up almost every time. So, you know, I think I I knew that, and I'm sure it gets brought up a lot on the podcast too. So the listeners must be aware of that.
Oh, I felt bad for Peter, because Peter was kind of like the next equivalent of so Peter Boss, for those who are new to the show, was a longtime host of the show and a sports enthusiast as well. But he was the one who helped me realize that I was more of a sports radical, because every time he told me, like, hey Cam, did you watch that game that happened this other night? I was like, yeah, what did you think of that play that happened in the bottom of the fourth inning? And like, do you think they got the call right, or would you have done? And Peter was like, oh, I meant like, did you enjoy watching it, and that kind of thing. But yeah, so I love Peter, and he was always a great great guy to talk sports about, but I realized that I'm more than the average sports enthusiast, unfortunately, for better or for worse.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, after all this time in the CCBR, after watching the movement grow and change, I'm wondering, where do you see the pro-life movement going in the next few years?
So I feel like it's going to be so fascinating to see what happens in the Canadian pro-life movement, because we're not fully autonomous from the American pro-life movement. I feel like there's a degree of separation and there's a degree of autonomy, but we are so ever so slightly influenced at times, and very significantly influenced at times, with politics in America. And I feel like how that bleeds over with the Trump policies around in vitro fertilization and abortion pill access and that kind of thing, and how that's going to alter Canadian politics and the trickle down. I feel like we're getting into a really interesting time in Canadian pro-life history. I feel like Canadian pro-life groups are collaborating more and more, which is really exciting. I feel like there's more and more pro-lifers who are getting active and getting involved, and a resurgence of campus engagement and a resurgence of political activity, and in some ways a passing of the guard. But I feel like even with only 15 years experience, I am already witnessing, oh man, we've tried that before and that didn't work. I don't know if that group should be pursuing that idea. Like, I would love it if we could sit down and talk about that idea and kind of what our experience was trying that method. And, oh, okay, that's an initiative that is not new. That's something that has been done before. And I hope that they correct for the mistakes that we made, because it's a really good idea, but we made all of these mistakes in the past. And so I feel like right now, with a lot of the passing of torches happening in a lot of different pro-life organizations, now is a really interesting opportunity to see how much have we learned? How much have we learned from the past? How much have we learned from those that have carried the torch for so long? Can we lean upon their wisdom in a way that's going to streamline the growing momentum that we have, or are we going to make some of the same mistakes that have already been made in the past number of decades, I suppose? And so I think it's a really exciting time. I think that, unfortunately, in some ways, Canadians are not going to have full control over the trajectory of what's happening in our country because of the spillover effect from America, for better or for worse, and how it influences not only our politics, but also our culture and the willingness of people to engage and how they engage in conversations about abortion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that's a really valuable message, especially for the new guys in the movement, like me, right? We need to look at where we've come from to understand where we're going to go. And yeah, also agree, it is a really exciting time, and I'm super stoked to see how things will move. And yeah, I think that's a fantastic place to end the podcast. Thank you so much, Cam, for having me on the show to interview you. This has been a lot of fun.
Beauty. Thank you, Oscar, for doing this. I hope that the audience enjoyed it as well. And I'm looking forward to the project that you and I are working on. More updates and news on that going forward. Please give us a shout out if you want to hear more about Oscar. Hopefully I'll have him featured on Humans of the Pro-Life Movement in the near future. But show him some love, folks, in the comments, in the reviews, on the ratings, all that kind of thing. Check us out on YouTube. Check us out on your favorite podcatcher, and always at our website as well at prolifeguys.com. Thanks a ton. May God bless you all abundantly, wherever you're at, however many hours are left in your day.